Today is Thursday, July 22nd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Gene Adolfo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. top general says the Taliban has momentum in Afghanistan.
Strategic momentum appears to be sort of with the Taliban. The Afghan security forces, though, are consolidating their forces.
Plus, U.S. COVID-19 cases surges to more than 26,000 a day.
Fast-spreading Delta variant has led to a surge in cases and hospitalizations, particularly in areas with high vaccine hesitancy rates.
Also, Tokyo Olympics open tomorrow despite COVID-19 cases. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. The chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff says the Taliban appear to have, quote, strategic momentum, unquote, in the fight for control of Afghanistan. General Mark Milley said at a Pentagon news conference that as the Taliban increases pressure on key cities, they are setting the stage for a decisive period in the coming weeks while American forces complete their withdrawal. Milley said that while the Taliban are trying to suggest the inevitability of victory over the government forces, he thinks the Afghan military could still prevail. He said they will have to show the necessary will and leadership to avoid failure. The Pentagon says the U.S. withdrawal will be completed by August 31st, and while the Biden administration promises to continue financial assistance and logistical support for Afghan forces, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the focus of U.S. military efforts there will be countering terrorist threats, not the Taliban. Milley said the Taliban now control about half of the 419 district centers in Afghanistan, and while they have yet to capture any of the country's 34 provincial capitals, they are pressuring about half of them. As the Taliban seize more territory, the Afghan security forces are consolidating their positions to protect key population centers, including Kabul, he said.
Strategic momentum appears to be sort of with the Taliban. The Afghan security forces, though, are consolidating their forces. So part of this is they're giving up district centers in order to consolidate their forces because they're taking an approach to protect the population.
That's U.S. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley. Turkey is going ahead with its plans to take over security at the Kabul International Airport after the pullout of U.S. troops, despite opposition from the Taliban. Ankara is in negotiations with Washington to secure the airport, which analysts say is key to maintaining stability and an international presence in Afghanistan. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
The Taliban has warned Turkey of severe consequences if its military remains in Afghanistan when other foreign forces pull out. But Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, in remarks this week, appeared to play down those threats and indicated negotiations would continue.
Şu an itibariyle gerek dışişleri nezdinde.
Erdogan says whether at the level of the foreign ministry or at his level, Turkey is trying to see what kind of talks it can hold with the Taliban and where these talks can take them. Ankara is banking on its historical ties with Afghanistan and its status as NATO's only predominantly Muslim member to help ease Taliban opposition. The 500-person Turkish force in Afghanistan has also avoided any military confrontation with the Taliban. However, Hussein Baja, head of the Ankara-based Foreign Affairs Institute, who has recently returned from the region, warns Ankara is overestimating its position.
Any Turkish participation concerning the airport would be disastrous for Turkish foreign policy. Taliban, they stated they don't like Tayyip Erdogan and they don't like Turkey's military presence. Taliban is very determined to kick out all the forces. Turkey's presence there is definitely unwanted.
Turkey is continuing discussions with Washington over the airport mission. Both sides describe the talks as productive. Relations between the NATO members have been deeply strained, especially over Ankara's deepening ties with Moscow. İlhan Özgel, economist for the Duvar news portal, says Ankara sees the Kabul airport mission as key to repairing relations with Washington.
The most important thing is that the AKP government is trying to fix the ties with the Biden administration and they want to offer something good for them. Ankara is trying to prove that it's a very good ally, it's a precious ally that they cannot be lost and they cannot be ignored.
Turkey is looking to its close allies, Pakistan and Qatar, which some observers say have close relations with the Taliban, to overcome opposition from the group. But Baja warns that with the Taliban believing it's on the verge of assuming power, the importance of those countries is diminishing.
Taliban does not consider Pakistan and Qatar and Turkey as the countries which should be on the priority list. No, they are not. Politically speaking, Russia, China, and America. Maybe India to a certain degree. Taliban say we establish our state, then we negotiate.
With only a matter of weeks left before the pullout of American forces is complete, analyst Uzgel warns if the Taliban maintains its opposition, Ankara could find itself trapped.
If Turkey insists on maintaining troops there after the withdrawal of NATO, which has already happened, that would be risky. If Turkey concedes to Taliban's recent statement, that would be a humiliation for Turkey.
With Ankara having little leverage over the Taliban, Uzgel suggests a last-minute collapse in US-Turkish talks over the airport operation could provide a face-saving option for Ankara, but at a cost to bilateral ties. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The Iraqi power grid was attacked several times recently, and several violent attacks exposed the vulnerability of Iraqi security sector despite years of U.S. training and backing. The White House said that President Joe Biden will welcome a visit by Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi on July 26th, and that the meeting will, quote, highlight the strategic partnership between the United States and Iraq, unquote. Edmund Garib, professor of Middle East history at the American University in Washington, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi about the challenges facing Iraq's government and the visit by the Iraqi prime minister.
There are bigger problems. The security problems are there, but they have made some gains. Recently, we have seen there have been reports, although they have not received a great deal of attention, there have been arrests of some of the people who have launched attacks against some of the protesters in Iraq. There was recently, just in a few days ago, the announcement of the arrest of the man who is supposed to have killed a prominent historian and analyst, al-Hashimi. These are some gains for the Iraqi government. Nevertheless, the Iraqi government faces a much more serious problem. They face there's a lot of corruption in the government. The government has not been able to resolve issues to improve the living standards of the people, the lack of electricity, lack of clean water, a lack of security in some areas, and this is what's needed. At the same time, there's also the pressure, on the other hand, from the militias, from Iran, its supporters, who want to see the U.S. forces out. Then we're going to be seeing a visit by the Iraqi Prime Minister to the United States to meet with U.S. senior U.S. officials, with the U.S. President. Basically, on the one hand, they want U.S. combat forces out, but they want to see the continued of their strategic partnership because they feel that they need the support. They need intelligence support. They need more training. They need building capacity, help. They need advice. And I think this is the direction that the Iraqi government appears to be moving. Of course, a great deal will depend also on what kind of results do we see in the negotiations in Vienna between Iran and the U.S. international group. I think that would be very significant and would affect what happens in Iraq on the ground. Also, Iraqi elections are coming up, and will the prime minister gain the kind of support that he needs to continue in his position? Because he's trying to play a balancing role. He does not want Iraq to become a proxy war arena between the United States and Iran, but he feels that the U.S. has a role to play, and also that they want to maintain a relationship with Iran. At the same time, they have improved relations with Jordan and Egypt, and that's also a new development that might bring some balance on the ground.
The White House said that the visit by Mustafa al-Kadhimi, the Prime Minister of Iraq, to the White House on July 26 will highlight the strategic partnership between the United States and Iraq. What do you make of that statement?
Basically, it's clear that the U.S. would like to maintain and influence Iraq. Iraq is a pivotal and important strategic country. Also, the U.S. wants to reduce its presence in the region and to focus on these challenges in the Indian Ocean area and the Pacific Ocean area and the South China Sea. Nevertheless, the U.S. wants to maintain this presence, strengthen ties, and to have a government that's more capable of standing on its own feet. And this is something that recently the Iraqi prime minister has said. He He said, we as Iraqis want to and are working to stand on our own feet. Nevertheless, we would still would like to have this strategic also partnership relationship with the United States. We don't need military forces, but we need training, we need advice, we need intelligence support, we need help with the building capacities. And this is what I believe, this to explore these issues while maintaining relationship with the Iraqi government and with the Iraqi security forces.
That's Edmond Gharib, professor of Middle East history at American University in Washington, speaking with my colleague Mohammed El-Shenawi. Jordan's King Abdullah was the first Arab leader to visit the Biden White House. Some analysts say the visit helped in resetting relations with Jordan, a key Middle East ally for Washington, which were shaken during former President Donald Trump's tenure. For VOA, Dale Gavlak in Amman reports.
Bruce Riddell, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, tells VOA that numerous meetings between King Abdullah and top U.S. officials are taking place to underscore American support, not just for Jordan, but its moderate ruler and his position. Abdullah, traditionally a key broker on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, increasingly found his position squeezed by the Trump administration's so-called deal of the century, observers say, because the arrangement did not include a two-state solution to the conflict. Jordan also found its role as the custodian of Muslim and Christian holy sites in Jerusalem undercut by former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Then there were domestic and regional issues complicating the equation. In April, a royal aide, an envoy, and the king's half-brother, Prince Hamza, were accused of an alleged plot with Saudi Arabia to overthrow Abdullah. Bruce Riddell comments.
It's very much a reset of the relationship after the very difficult Trump years. Then there has been added urgency to the need to reboot the relationship by the discovery of the conspiracy this spring. The Jordanians don't want to publicly discuss the role of the Saudis in supporting the conspiracy, but it's got to be an issue of acute concern for them. And it should be an area of acute concern for Americans, too. One American ally trying to destabilize another American ally is not helpful and is very dangerous.
Meanwhile, U.S. academic Curtis Ryan, who focuses on Jordan, told Dubai's The National Newspaper that Jordan and its partners see the new three-way alignment or axis with Iraq and Egypt as an alternative power center in Arab politics that helps to bring non-Gulf voices back to the forefront of Arab politics. In the past, the trio worked as a united front in dealing with Gulf allies over aid, oil, and investment, he said. Riddell pointed to the July 18 visit by Abdullah and Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to Baghdad as a positive step to limit Iranian influence there.
The king has been the most energetic Arab leader by far in trying to support a stable Iraqi government. This summit in Baghdad of Iraq, Jordan, and Egypt is the first time the Sunni Arabs have ever really done anything, 18 years since the fall of Saddam, that they've actually done something to try to not only stabilize Iraq, but also to offset Iranian influence. They have notoriously, particularly the Saudis, done so very little there.
Riddell says both the U.S. and Jordan want American troops to stay available, particularly in that triangle where Jordan, Iraq, and Syria come together to provide stability there. Analysts also think that Jordan could house U.S. troops after they withdraw from Iraq and Afghanistan. Jordan made public a defense agreement with the U.S. in March that permits free entry of American forces, aircraft, and vehicles into the kingdom. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
The U.S. has averaged more than 26,000 new COVID-19 cases a day over the past week, more than doubled in number a month ago, with the more contagious Delta variant making up 80% of cases. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Guwara looks at the Biden administration's strategy for dealing with the surge as misinformation continues to drive anti-vaccination sentiments in certain groups.
COVID-19 restrictions on bars and nightclubs in some U.S. cities have been fully lifted, but the fast-spreading Delta variant has led to a surge in cases and hospitalizations, particularly in areas with high vaccine hesitancy rates. The Biden administration calls it a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Dr. Rochelle Walensky is the director for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Unvaccinated people are at risk, and communities that are fully vaccinated are generally faring well.
Despite the administration's
efforts to push the free and readily available vaccines, government data shows only 49% of Americans are fully vaccinated. A recent Axios Ipsos poll shows 30% of American adults surveyed said they haven't gotten the vaccine. Chris Jackson is the head of polling at Ipsos.
There's a wide range of reasons given for not wanting to get the vaccine. They generally speaking come down to some sort of sense of safety of the vaccine itself, along with not thinking that the coronavirus is that serious or that dangerous.
The data shows that anti-vaccine individuals primarily get their news from alternative media sources, which often spread health misinformation. Last week, U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy warned of its dangers.
Misinformation has led people to resist wearing masks in high-risk settings. It's led them to turn down proven treatments and to choose not to get vaccinated.
A recent Washington Post ABC News poll showed 86% of Democrats have received at least one shot, compared with 45% of Republicans. Now the Republican Party leadership is urging supporters to get vaccinated. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
I want to encourage everybody to do that and to ignore all of these other voices that are giving demonstrably bad advice.
This marks a notable shift after months of Republican resistance against the Biden administration's pandemic efforts. Responding to VOA's question on board Air Force One, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
Anyone who goes out there and shares accurate information about the effectiveness of the vaccine, about the fact that it can save lives, is a positive step in our view, and hopefully it continues.
Meanwhile, at least two vaccinated White House staff have tested positive for COVID-19 after interacting with more than 50 Texas state representatives who visited the nation's capital last week. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
A Hong Kong court on Thursday sentenced seven men to between 3 to 1.5 and 7 years in prison for their role in 2019 attack on pro-democracy protesters, reporters, and bystanders at a train station at the height of anti-government protests. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
A Hong Kong court sentenced seven men to prison on Thursday for their role in a 2019 train station attack on pro-democracy protesters. In handing down the sentences, Judge Eddie Yip described the crimes as, quote, mob justice, which caused panic among the general public. It was one of the most violent scenes during the height of anti-government protests. In July 2019, more than 100 people in white T-shirts beat protesters, reporters, and bystanders at a train station in the northern Yuen Long district. Some activists suspected gangs were involved and accused the police of collusion, citing their sluggish response to the attack. Police have denied those claims, placing the blame on other protests around the city for their slow response. On Thursday, the city's district court sentenced five men to the maximum seven-year penalty for rioting, as well as wounding with intent or conspiracy to wound with intent. Two others were given a shorter sentence because they had pled guilty before the trial. These were the first convictions of any of the white-shirted attackers.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Hundreds of workers have fled businesses in northern Haiti after demonstrations near the hometown of slain President Jovenel Moïse grew violent. Associated Press journalists saw the body of one man who witnesses say was shot Wednesday in the community of Quartier Morin. It is near the town of True du Nord, where Moïse was born. Roadblocks were set up between the two communities temporarily, barring cars from entering or leaving, as two plumes of thick black smoke rose nearby. Commemorations have begun to mark 10 years since Norway's worst peacetime violence. On July 22, 2011, right-wing extremist Anders Breivik set off a bomb in the capital Oslo, killing 8 people, before heading to tiny Utøya Island, where he stalked and shot dead 69 mostly teenage members of the Labour Party's youth wing. Events will take place around the country Thursday, including a service in Oslo Cathedral that will end with bells ringing in churches throughout Norway. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Excitement is building over the Tokyo Olympics despite more athletes testing positive for COVID-19. While the games are set to begin this Friday, the head of the Tokyo Organizing Committee says there is still a chance they could be canceled due to the virus. Still, sports fans in the U.S. are eagerly gearing up to watch, as VOA's Mariam Adialo reports.
The Olympics Games in Tokyo are back on track starting Friday, 1 year after being postponed because of the coronavirus pandemic. U.S. fans, like others around the world, are eagerly waiting to watch.
I'm most excited for track because I was in track in high school, so I'm most excited to see that, and especially the girls' race.
I love track and field. I'm looking forward to some of the newer events. I think there's skateboarding, if I'm not mistaken, and beach volleyball is always fun.
So I'm really excited that baseball is being played at the Olympics again. It's been a long time, and I'm really happy for that.
But COVID-19 continues to be a threat, and there is concern that Japan's vaccination rate is lagging.
I was hoping that the government of Japan would have been more prepared as far as vaccinations are concerned, because I know that there are a lot of other nations who are concerned about their athletes going out.
Others are not worried.
I feel like the team would be very safe and they would feel cautious themselves.
Japan has reported over 850,000 COVID-19 cases and 15,000 deaths since the start of the pandemic, according to a tally by the Johns Hopkins University's Resource Center. Tokyo's governor says the city's medical system is ready to hold safe and secure Olympics.
Quite a lot of people will be vaccinated, and many will be vaccinated during the Tokyo Games. What will change as a result is that the rate of the elderly becoming seriously ill has been greatly reduced. The number of deaths is also very low, almost zero.
But the governor also warned that the coronavirus pandemic is far from over and the Delta variant remains a risk. This has led dozens of protesters to march against hosting the Games.
Over 1,000 people have gotten infected in three consecutive days in Tokyo, and people are dying. If we had allocated money and human resources to anti-COVID measures, the situation wouldn't have got this bad.
The chief of the Tokyo Organizing Committee said Tuesday he has not ruled out a last-minute cancellation of the Games as more athletes test positive for the virus. The Tokyo Olympics are due to run from July 23rd to August 8th. Mariam Adialo, VOA News.
Olympic officials are warning against what they say are divisive political protests at the Summer Games in Tokyo. But as VOA's Bill Gallo reports, the event may be the perfect opportunity for athlete activism.
Global Black Lives Matter protests. A Me Too movement in support of women's rights. Both sprung up in the years since the last Summer Olympics, and both may influence the Tokyo Games.
I think we have a perfect storm, if you will, for an outburst of athlete activism that is rooted in fighting for black freedom and also for human rights in general.
No peace! No racism!
In the U.S., professional basketball players have been at the forefront of anti-racism protests. Many will now compete in Tokyo.
I've been
US
disrespected
star Megan Rapinoe
and
has
dismissed
also been
because I am a woman.
Pay.
And I've been told that I don't deserve any more than less because I am a woman.
Olympic protests aren't new. The most iconic was the Black Power salute by U.S. athletes Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Games. The International Olympic Committee later introduced Rule 50, which bans player protests. The rule was loosened this year. But IOC Chief Thomas Bach recently warned against what he called divisive protests, saying the podium and medal ceremonies are not meant for politics, which is ironic given that the IOC's own website praises Carlos and Smith as legends.
And they say what courage it took for them to do that. And I agree, it took a lot of courage. But they've made a new rule. Even these guidelines do not permit there to be a new John Carlos or Tommy Smith at the Tokyo Olympics.
Some conservatives in the U.S. say athletes should stick to sports, but the trend is in the other direction. The Olympics is no exception.
The Olympic Games and international sport is so entwined with politics, with all of the national symbols. It's the flags, it's the anthems, it's the emblems on the uniform, you know, the uniforms being in those national colors.
It's the biggest platform many players will ever have. And it's likely we'll be seeing what matters most to them. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinua Duofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.